Off the ball.
Rugby.
Sport creates such community. Like for me, it really had a massive staple in my life and kind of gave me direction and, you know, that sense of belonging.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Green Scene on Off the Ball.
With Cadbury, a proud sponsor of the Republic of Ireland football teams.
Welcome along to this week's episode of The Green Scene. Luther Blissett, Serge Gnabry, David Kelly, Dennis Hurley, Dieter Muller, Jos Weber, and now Jack Moylan joined the pantheon of names who scored hat-tricks on their international debuts. Saturday saw Moylan become the second Irish player to score a treble on his international outing since David Kelly in 1987 against Israel. Grenada perhaps didn't provide the most sternest of competition. Tom Cannon also bagged his first international goals in Murcia. But now the wheels keep on turning and tension turns to games with Qatar and Canada over the next few weeks with some LOI players included. I'm joined by two fellas who made the trip to sunny Spain and they're still in recovery mode after it. Matthew Brennan and Ben Sibes. How are we, lads?
Yeah, all good, yeah. And my recovery is partly to do with my trip to Murcia, but partly to do with something else. Ben, how are you?
I'm flying. No recovery at all. No need for recovery.
Strictly professional.
Yeah, well, listen. I had no reason to be strictly professional.
You were doing a little bit of... You can call that work.
Can I? I was just going to watch a game. I would have gone to watch a game regardless of what my job was.
Yeah, no, true. But you were there and you could... I think you could expense that.
They got to the higher ups. Yeah, I don't think any of us are able to make that decision. But
Matthew should expense his trip, get into the comments now because we're live on YouTube
and get in touch at whatever email you
get
can.
In touch at thegreenscene@offtheball.com.
Go even higher than that.
Instagram, Twitter, or just message share directly.
Yeah, that's what I was getting at. Yeah.
We're going to get on to. We'll quickly get on to the squad, I suppose, for the next two games for Qatar and Canada. But I suppose very briefly on the game on Saturday, 5-0 win, Jack Moylan hat trick. Tom Cannon also scored 2-5 goals all in the second half. Matthew, from a fan's perspective, you were in the ground. What was it like? Because on television, there was the worst shadow I've ever seen on half the pitch for at least most of the first half. But how was it for you in the sunny climes of Murcia?
Yeah, it was a unique experience, I'll say. I won't go as far as to say it felt like a behind closed doors game because
it looked like it, but
obviously it would do with the fact that it's a 33,000 seater, 31,000 seater,
31,500.
And the fact there was only 800 or 900 people there. But the fact that there was 800 or 900 people there is still pretty impressive. The game itself was, on the shadow. Obviously, I imagine that's very annoying for while you're watching on television. Where I was sitting, probably on the opposite side to yourself, the sun was just in my eyes for the whole game. So I sort of had the sunglasses on and I had a bucket hat that I wasn't really wearing, but I was kind of had it like just to my eyebrows for people who can't see what I'm doing.
Yeah, we can see the timeline.
Probably better off, yeah. I was doing that and got to see the game. And then towards the end, last 5 or 10 minutes, the sun sort of went down. So it was a little bit more watchable. Obviously, we were never going to read a whole lot into what we were seeing. It was nice to see some players don the Ireland shirt for the first time or for the first time in a while. For some others, as far as performances go, despite him dropping probably one of the worst misses I've ever seen from an Ireland player in Adam Ida, I actually thought he was very good up front. He had a couple of nice touches. Something that we don't really see a whole lot from him. His touch can be a little bit suspect, but he had a couple of nice little flicks and kept the play going nicely. I think he was heavily involved in Tom Cannon's goal. Maybe I might be wrong. I think it was him.
I think
it was him. Jason Knight, I thought, was very impressive playing right wing back. A little bit kind of unique for him. I suppose he's done a little bit with his club. And he did it a bit in the game against Macedonia, I think, as well, did he? Maybe he played midfield for that one, but he's played there before, but maybe not so regularly in an Ireland shirt. And then as well as that, I thought Andrew Moran, when he came on, was very, very good. Obviously, it was 0-0 at half-time, you have to remember, and it finished 5-0. Now, that can come down to the fact that all of our players are professional footballers, and not all of the Grenadian lads would be. A lot of them play back in their home country. So, on that front, it wasn't a surprise to see us finish the game strongly. But I did think that one takeaway I had was our midfield is somewhere that we've had problems with over the last little while, I think it's fair to suggest. And Jason Malumbi has definitely come to the fore over the last couple of matches as someone who we can trust. Josh Cullen had been good as well before he picked up that injury. Boston Lawal is someone we're very excited about. And I think we are getting to a point where we can look at our midfield and go, this pairing might suit for this game, and this pairing might suit for this game. And Andrew Moran is someone that I think could have a massive impact on a game or on games for Ireland when we're playing against the teams who are going to sit back and who aren't going to kind of take us on, which does happen regularly enough, and we've struggled with that in the past, particularly Armenia, obviously, when we went over to Yerevan. And I don't think it was at the time, I don't think that was something that we were like, this is a flash in the pan. That was something that had happened a couple of times in recent years. And if we've got someone like him who can put their foot on the ball and pick out a pass and isn't afraid to try things, that's very, very kind of positive.
Yeah.
So that would be my takeaways from it, but I wouldn't be reading a whole lot into it. Actually, just to mention, I actually shared a flight home on the Sunday morning with a number of the Ireland players. Jason Malumbi was there, Andrew Moran himself was there, Josh Keighley was there, Edu Amaku was there too, as well as Jim Crawford. So I didn't get talk. I got talking to Malumbi for a minute or two, but just said hello. That was all. Left him be off on his holidays back to Ireland, sunny Ireland,
rubbing shoulders with
the greats,
with the greats and the goods. And from a fan's perspective, what was the crack? Was there many Ireland fans there? Had many travelled?
Yeah.
What was the vibe like in the pubs and clubs? Is what we really want to know.
Yeah. Well, I suppose from my perspective, I'd actually booked this as a holiday, not to Murcia. I was going to Valencia for a couple of nights. And then the game was announced and we were like, oh, we could make this work or whatever. So I was actually in Valencia on Thursday night, Friday. And Friday morning, or Saturday morning, got a 3-hour bus from Valencia to Murcia and was there for an hour or two, chilled out for a while. And actually just went straight to the game. There was a lot of Ireland fans around wearing different sorts of stuff. A lot of lads had like their county jerseys on, I suppose, because they were abroad. And, you know, you might spot that a bit easier. But the green is very, very distinct. So there was a lot of Irish people there. The vibe I got from it was that a lot of them, there was a lot of what I would assume are like college students who are there on Erasmus, who had a couple of friends with them who weren't Irish. So there was a lot of sort of Spanish people there, or people from other countries too, which was interesting. But then you obviously also had the guys and the girls who follow Ireland home and away.
Yeah.
Jimmy DeBell was there and they were banging their drums and all this sort of stuff was going on. So there was a good following there. I think definitely improved off the back of, or, you know, factored in the success we've had over the last couple of months. People decided, let's go. I got talking to one guy actually on the train, Seamus from Donegal. Was telling me he watches the Green Scene, and hopefully he's watching now. Hopefully you're keeping well, Seamus. Hope you go home all right. He was actually going to Alicante. They were very close to missing their train when I left them, so hopefully they got it. But yeah, they were telling me that he'd gone to Budapest, didn't go to Prague because he didn't have a ticket, and he decided, you know what, I'm not going if I don't have a ticket. And then decided he wanted to come over to Murcia for this game. The weather obviously a factor, and the fact that it's a very popular holiday destination.
Yeah.
But as far as the fans and that go, a good mix of young people, old people, and everyone in between.
Yeah. Ben, you were there in a professional capacity, just a bit like Matthew. You spoke to Tyrod Armola, Rory Finneran, Hemal Grimson, and perhaps most interestingly, Jack Moylan, the man of the moment. And he paid, you know, tribute to the people he worked with Lincoln, but also quite noticeably to Damien Duff and the League of Ireland and his education in the League of Ireland. How good was it for you, even from a personal perspective, that, you know, someone like Jack Moylan, who bounced around the League of Ireland, but, you know, had a couple of clubs, and then he's eventually made his way to across the water, and his first international game for the senior team, okay, albeit against pretty poor opposition, he scores a hat-trick.
Yeah, it's pretty safe to say he's definitely a late bloomer in terms of League of Ireland, and Bowes kind of basically, you know, told him that that club wasn't the club for him, and he found his way at Shelburne when Bowes didn't want him. He obviously had a spell out on loan at Wexford, where people kind of thought he'd make his way back into the Bohemians team after a good spell in the first division. It was funny, like, there was decent enough press back, I suppose, travelling for an out of FIFA window friendly over there. And you could tell every time he got the ball and when he did score, like, everyone was just kind of willing him to do well. Obviously, like, we would all follow League of Ireland games every Friday night, as opposed to the people on the beat do. So everyone is kind of just willing that storyline of Jack Moylan to get over the line, and also willing it for him as a person. I think it's pretty clear for everyone that the mental work that he's put in to get to where he's got to the season he's had at Lincoln. like it's kind of fairy tale stuff, isn't it? I spoke to Hamer after, and Hamer, you know, asked me, you know, I don't think anyone's ever done this for Ireland, or, you know, kind of had to burst that bubble and be like, well, 1987, David Kelly did do it, but, you know, we can forget about that for now. It's long in the past. But like that is what, as soon as it came to everyone's head, as soon as he scored the hat-trick, everyone went, oh, David Kelly.
But it's a great record.
It's a fantastic record. The fact that we have two players who scored a hat-trick on their debut is insane.
Now, there's two Dutch players who both scored four on their debuts.
The Dutch, like,
a long time ago.
Who were the Dutch players?
Oh, they were from the 40s, and there one was from the early part of the 20th
they were
century.
Ball against one was farmers.
Yeah, well, that's strong words there from Ben from Dublin.
Salty Ben from Dublin, who's lost to a bunch of cultures on Sunday.
I'm North County Dublin.
It's Dublin.
I'm one with the land.
It's Dublin.
I'm with the land.
So just on that, actually, there was a fella called Dennis Hurley who scored, I think, four goals for England against Ireland in a 13-0 win back in 1882. So quite an Irish name. I suppose kind of moving on from the game, we have Qatar and we have Canada coming up. Obviously, Canada, the game is in Montreal, the Qatar game's in Dublin. As well, we definitely are live on YouTube now at this moment in time. So if you want to get your comments in, we'll read out a few of the best ones. And remember, the Green Scene on Off the Ball is with Cadbury's, a proud sponsor of the Republic of Ireland football teams. We'll just get you the squad very quickly for the next 2 weeks, I guess. So the squad is Caoimhín Kelleher, Ed McGinty from Shamrock Rovers, Conor Brann from Cork City, who obviously is a first division player. He'll be in the squad for the Qatar match only. And Mark Travers, he will be in the squad for the Canada match only.
Kelleher is Qatar only, not Conor.
Kelleher is Qatar only as well, actually. Yeah, there's a little star beside his name. So I'd imagine Ed McGinty must be travelling for both.
I think Conor Brann will travel to both.
Okay. Well, it's all a bit of a mix-up. Anyway, Caoimhín Kelleher, Ed McGinty, Conor Brann, Mark Travers. Defenders, Seamus Coleman, Nathan Collins, Liam Scales, Jake O'Brien, Andrew Omabamadele, Corey Ndaba, James Abankwa, Alex Murphy. The midfielders, Jason Malumbi, Alan Brown, Finn Azaz, Joe Hodge, Alex Gilbert, Dawson Devoy. The attackers, Troy Parr, Jaden Ume, Mason Melia, Chidozie Ogbene, Ryan Manning down as an attacker.
I was waiting for you to get to that.
Adam Brennan from Shamrock Rovers. Firstly, we'll just go into the four League of Ireland players, and we nearly count Mason Melia as a League of Ireland player as well. His last senior appearance, I suppose, was in the League of Ireland. But Ed McGinty,
I think he'd rather be described as a Premier League footballer.
Of course he is. But I suppose his last senior football was with Pats. But Adam Brennan, Mason Melia, Dawson Devoy, Ed McGinty, and Conor Brann, four or five lads that have played League of Ireland football very, very recently. Is this a good thing for the league, and will those games be called off, most interestingly, next week?
It's an interesting one for the league. I do think it's a good thing to have, first of all, to preface that, it's a good thing to have League of Ireland players playing international football. That is absolutely a good thing. It's very interesting timing. So obviously Bowes play Shamrock Rovers on Monday, which is the 25th, and then Bowes play, I think, Sligo, I can't remember, Shamrock Rovers have, on the weekend following. And basically, we asked Hamer Grimson after the game, what does this mean for the League of Ireland fixtures? And he kind of just said, I don't know, it's up to them.
Yeah.
They can choose whatever they want. Mm. He did get in touch with them, interestingly enough, like it's not kind of what happened before. Hamer did personally ring Alan Reynolds and Stephen Bradley, and of course Cork City, to let them know that their players will be called up. And he did say that they were delighted for their players, and they were very happy that their players were called up to the Irish team. Alan Reynolds has come out and said he wants common sense to prevail when players are called up outside of FIFA window. So the problem basically is this Qatar game is outside of the FIFA window. The Canada game, inside it. Qatar game, outside it. It's the 28th. It's 2 days before the Champions League final. It's a day before League of Ireland fixtures, and, you know, 3-4 days after the Monday night derby. So you kind of have a situation where maybe the Friday games get pulled for Rovers and Bowes, and they play the derby on the Monday, but then obviously Adam Brennan, Ed McGinty and Dawson Devoy won't be involved in the Qatar game then, because they'll have only had match day minus one for training, which is not sufficient enough training. So then you may as well play the Friday games then as well, and not go over to Canada. yeah. until when the team are travelling, which I think is the Monday or Tuesday. So it's very, like, we're going to have to wait basically and just hear word from League of Ireland managers and from the League of Ireland. It's a fascinating situation.
Surely they can
surely
they can just get all on board and like, this is it. Like, we, for the greater good of Irish football, like, we didn't sing off the same hymn sheet between the league and the international teams for a very, very long time. Surely we can just all come together now and kind of for the benefit of the game. I guess I get it, the clubs will want their own interests at heart. The European games are, you know, they're on the horizon. The draw is in the 16th of June, I think, as well, which won't be too far away for Shamrock Rovers and Derry and Bowes and wherever else. Like, it's you
Shelburne.
Know, and Shelburne, sorry. Oh yeah, they did come third.
Is there any reason why you wouldn't have just waited before announcing this? Could this squad have to be announced now?
Well, they meet up on Tuesday, so yeah.
Okay. So how is there any grey area around whether the League of Ireland players are going to join up or not?
Because Shamrock Rovers play Bowes the day before that.
Yeah.
And then they're both scheduled to have games the day after the Qatar game.
But he should know, like there shouldn't be any, like, he should know if the players are going to be allowed to go or not.
Well,
he should be told. They should have decided this already. It shouldn't, like, surely it's not a case of after the game they're going to be like, yeah, you can go, or no, you can't go. Do you know what I mean?
Like, are you saying Hamer should have?
Well, I'm saying it should collaboratively. Like, we should, if you're
yeah, but trying to get everyone like to talk to each other in Irish football is notoriously difficult.
It's ridiculous.
This is probably the best it's ever been.
It hasn't been like this for like the last couple of weeks. It's been like this for 50 years, maybe probably longer. Yeah. But I don't know. Like, surely you come to an agreement. Okay, the game has been called off, isn't ideal. But then again, in the League of Ireland and. Coaches and managers and players have said it before that the league is too front loaded. You play too many games this part of the year, and then you play maybe not enough games towards the back half of the year.
I don't know if that necessarily applies to, say, Shamrock Rovers, who are going to have aspirations of playing group stage football again.
Yeah, but the league,
and they're going to be basically playing Thursday, Sunday.
Yeah, but the league shouldn't be.
Like, summer finishes.
Yeah, but they're victims of their own success. Like, that's like.
But the other side of this is you look at it and you go,
they have a huge squad.
If you were asking like a Premier League club or whoever it is to release their players outside of a window when they have games, the answer would be absolutely not.
Yeah, but this
we're
is
playing games.
Yeah, but this so, is not like, the Premier League. This isn't the Premier League. Like, this is.
Yeah, but that's the point. Like, the league shouldn't be treated as a, you know, oh sure, it's only a league game. It's only a League of Ireland game.
Yeah.
Let them go up.
Yeah,
like, that's the point, is the respect for the league. I get it's brilliant to have players in the squad. But like, I do kind of see Reynolds' point of there should be common sense, and like, if he has the Premier League,
what do you think he means by that?
Like, by you shouldn't be asked to postpone your games outside of FIFA window because players are called up. I can't put words in Alan Reynolds' mouth.
I'm just saying, if you're saying that, you can see his point about common sense prevailing. Yeah. I actually don't know what he means by that. I don't know what common sense is in this situation.
I presume it means players are allowed to play their games with their club.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Like from, like in League One and in League Two, like, there's obviously international players that play that level in England, and when there's a certain threshold of players that are called into a squad, the games are called off. Like, surely with this, and okay, you have a Cork City goalkeeper, you have two players from Shamrock Rovers and one from Bohemians. Surely you can come to some sort of decision where we can. You know, like, these lads should not be denied the chance to go and train and play with the elite players in the country. Like, this, they are one of the elite players. They are part of that group now. They're there on merit. For years and years and years, the league has been kind of, looked down upon by people, you know, outside of it especially, but also even within it as well, that, you know, that these players aren't good enough. But these players are good enough. Like, they've shown, Shamrock Rovers have shown that they're, you know, a team that you would not want to face in Europe. Shelburne obviously got to the Conference League league phase last year as well. Like these players should not be, you know, denied the opportunity to represent the country. This is an unbelievable opportunity for them, and whatever allowances, you know, that need to be made should be made. And it's an exciting time for them. Like, you work hard, you know, like when we were talking before the Czechia game, and any player that we talked to before the game or even after the game, the most, you know, the proudest moment of 99% of Irish players' career is when they put on the green shirt. And this is an opportunity that they could put on the green shirt next week. Whether, okay, it's a friendly against Qatar. Okay, you got the Dublin derby on Monday night as well. But still, this is a huge opportunity to say, okay, I played for Ireland. Like,
I completely get that, and I completely agree. I think they should be able to play for Ireland. But I think it's very easy to just say, oh, allowances should just be made to the games. You're asking the professional clubs to postpone their games for something that they don't have to postpone the games for, when they're going to be missing their best players.
Games are postponed.
And then it's going to be put into the backlog where there already is postponements. It's going to be put into the backlog towards the end of the season where...
But that happens.
If you're Shamrock Rovers, you are going to be aiming to be playing in group stage football where you're already then going to have to offload your games, and then you're going to have two more games thrown in to offload as well.
You have big squads to deal with this. This is why... Squads of 22. Could you see a situation where
a Premier League club would be asked to do the same thing?
No, because I don't think the Premier League is comparable, because it's just this monolith, this huge thing. Premier League is like, you know, look, you look at all the World Cup squads, like Brazil are picking players from Brighton and Brentford, you know, and Wolves, like, it's mental.
Not for the World Cup,
but they were thereabouts, I don't know. I think the Premier League isn't a fair comparison to make.
Whatever it's Premier League, but can you see it like a top league being asked to postpone your games and deal with the consequences yourself?
I know, but it's...
I'm not going at either the league or Hamer here. I think it's an interesting situation. And if I was Anne Reynolds or Stephen Bradley and I wanted my players there for that game that they are not necessarily required to be released for, I can completely understand that point of view.
It's
also an interesting situation for those managers. Are you gonna deny your players the chance to play for Ireland? That's basically the conundrum being asked to them by the Republic of Ireland.
It was not fair either.
Mm. There's a catch 22 though there as well, in that you're never going to have it all your own way. You're never going to have it right. And if you're going to make a point of complaining about the fact that your players aren't in squads or haven't been given the opportunity to be in squads, and then they get called up for one, what do you say then?
Yeah. And then
it can also be looked at the other way, whereas it's convenient now that the manager who hasn't called up any League of Ireland, this wouldn't be my view on it at all, but the manager who hasn't called up League of Ireland players before has decided to call them up at a point in time where it's very inconvenient for the clubs. So there's two ways of looking at it, and it's just whatever way you want to interpret it. But I just think it's mad that it's not that, like, when the call ups are made, that there's not just a blanket, they're coming or they're not.
That's
my point. It just seems there's a communication thing again, which hopefully is not something we're getting back into.
I was going to say quickly before you move on, there's a couple other ones as well in the squad that are, we don't know if they're going to be here or not. Middlesbrough players, Alan Brown and Alex Gaber, we don't know, and Finneas Asgren and Ryan Manning as well, we don't know, because we don't know what's going to happen with
the playoff final. On that as well, I want to kind of get your thoughts on some of the players that are playing the continent, Ben, but I'll go to you, Matthew, first. Joe Hodge at Tondela, I know you've been keeping a fairly, sharp eye on him, I suppose, over the last couple of months, especially before kind of the previous edition of the Green Scene. He is in the squad. Is he someone realistically with a chance that can kind of get into this squad when everybody is available?
Yeah, he falls into that category of player, really. I was talking about with Andy Moran, like Andrew Moran, who's just a bit different, and we haven't seen him, and he's been someone who's been very well touted for God knows how long. I mean, how long are we talking about Joe Hodge? And he made a brave move, I suppose, to go over and sign for Tondela, who had only been promoted to Ligue 1, the top division, over in Portugal. And a bit of a mixed start. I mean, I think they were relegated at the weekend, unfortunately for them. Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there with him. Wouldn't it all surprise you to see him get picked up by maybe another team in a similar position to what Tondela were in last year? And there'll always be options for him to come back to England at this stage, you know, if that is where he wanted to go. And he had a mixed start. He was in and out a bit. There was some weird stuff going on where he'd start a game, he'd play an hour, and then he wouldn't be in the squad the next day, and then he'd play the next game. So I think they were managing his minutes to a degree, in that he's always struggled with these kind of injuries. But then there was also an element of, I just don't know if the manager was fancying him. But then he went in a great run there for a while. He played five or six games on the bounce. Tondela were undefeated, and he was going pretty well. And he's been playing the last little while. Like, looking back, he was on the bench there.
He hasn't started a game in a month for Tondela.
Yeah, so he's been out of the squads then, obviously. But I don't know. Like, he's obviously not a bad option to have. Like, we'll see what he gets on.
Yeah, Corey Ndaba, Ben, left-sided centre-back for Lecce, playing in Serie A. Played a fair few minutes this year.
Yeah.
Played against Inter, I remember, a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
Is he someone that could challenge like Liam Scales for that position?
Similar type player, where you can play left of a back four, left of a back three, or the left wing back. When we asked Tamer about him specifically on Saturday evening, he kind of made the point of saying how... kind of like Hodge, he's in a team at Lecce, but he seems to play the games against the better teams in Serie A, and he doesn't seem to play the games against the lower teams in Serie A. So Hamer was kind of saying that, I think that tells you about the quality of player that's there, that he's, I don't know whether he's trying to make the point that he's better against better players. He could be. I think he's also eligible for Nigeria and South Africa is the other one. So look, I don't know if this is a case of get the guy in around the squad. If he's playing in Serie A, he must be half decent. Mm. Let's get him in and around the place. Yeah. And
he's been playing a few different positions as well. He's obviously a left back, but he's been playing a bit at centre half. I think he won game at right back earlier on the season too. So
yeah.
It probably hasn't gone exactly to plan for him when he went over. He obviously went over from Kilmarnock in Scotland and was one of their players. I think he might have been their player of the season last year. Mm. Another one of these exploits who's gone from Scotland to Italy, and that's been a successful avenue for a good few players. Seen Kieran Bowie scored there at the weekend against Inter Milan. So
who didn't actually make the Scotland squad?
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, I wonder was he. Yeah, I wonder what the thought process was there. But anyway, I imagine he'll look to kick on with them next year, and he's definitely no harm. Like we're not blessed at left back, you wouldn't say. We're not blessed really anywhere with depth, you know what I mean, with serious depth. So the more options we have, the more people we get to see. I mean, the left back at the weekend, we got to see Teo Adeyemola play 45 minutes and Will Ferry play 45 minutes. And Will Ferry was very good for especially the opening 10 or 15 minutes of the second half. I thought he looked very explosive down the left hand side, and he's obviously riding the crest of a wave, and he's also another man who's playing over in Scotland too, who's been linked all around the world, I think, over the last couple of weeks. Some strong links over to America, and it'll be interesting to see what he does do. Wouldn't be surprised to see him back in the championship. But yeah, look, listen, more options we have the better.
Yeah, three just exciting players just to finish on the squad are Mason Melia, Jaden Ume and Adam Brennan. Three exciting young attacking players, all under 21 still as well, 18 and 19.
I think Brennan is very well suited. So he hasn't had a great couple of weeks in the League of Ireland, I think, Adam Brennan. I was there on Friday night for the game against Dundalk, and Declan McDade did a very good job on right wing back on him. But Brennan does seem to fit the mould of the way Hamer wants to play for a left wing back. To be constantly up and down the line, constantly working, has that kind of creative ability at the end of it, where he obviously was a winger and now he's slotted back into left wing back. Like, I think we could see minutes for him at left wing back in one of these games, and I think that's probably his position for Ireland going forward if Hamer's to be the manager. I think he's a very interesting one to watch in these two games.
Troy Parrott picked up a rib injury on Sunday, so it remains to be seen whether he makes a squad next week. I know he'll be very keen to come back and represent his country, but he does have a huge summer ahead of him.
He was talking there about essentially saying goodbye, but not quite. I might be back again, but I might be gone, kind of.
I think the line was he's ready to take the next step.
Yeah.
So wherever that kind of takes him, we don't know. We don't actually, we spoke about this, but it was last week, it was AC Milan, Coventry City, where the next step is. But someone who took, or a group of people that took lots of steps onto the football pitch last Saturday afternoon was the Celtic fans.
I thought you were going a different route there. I thought you were going steps away from a stadium, and you're bringing that up.
No. So obviously Celtic and Hearts were doing battle for the Scottish Premiership title last week. A pretty thrilling game. Liam Scales central to all the things good again about Celtic. But Martin O'Neill comes back, wins a Scottish Premiership title. Looks like he could be in charge next season again, which is kind of mad considering, you know, he was sitting in that very seat, I think, back in October, he was... he was on Off the Ball Saturday launching his book. About a month later, then he was in the Celtic dugout, and then he was off. So obviously, he left, and Wilfred Nancy came in, and then all of a sudden he was back, and he leads Celtic to, what was it, 7 wins in the last 7 to go and win the Scottish title. Ben, I want to ask you, do Ireland regret getting rid of Martin O'Neill when they did?
Oh, no. No. I love Martin O'Neill, right? I absolutely love Martin O'Neill. I'm delighted. I'm over the moon that he won this title with Celtic. But Martin O'Neill is one of the best man managers that there is around in football. He is. He's one of the best man managers.
Yeah.
Hear me out. But it only tends to, it has a sell-by date. Mm. Like, Martin O'Neill's style of man management doesn't work for 10 years. It works brilliantly in, 3-4 year cycles.
He's like the Antonio Conte before Antonio Conte.
After.
And look, who are any of us to tell Martin O'Neill the way he manages? But it does seem to have its kind of, its end date. And once it goes past that end date, it kind of just keeps going one way. And I do think we were at a case with Republic of Ireland, with him and Roy Keane's tenure, that it just kind of had ran its natural conclusion. We just reached it.
Yeah, and it wasn't really a kind of the bringing through the next generation at the time, wasn't
it? And I think it was a brilliant spell, absolutely wonderful spell with two in charge. And the memories that we have from Euro 2016 are outstanding. And I think that is the best way to remember that. I don't know how it would have necessarily went on if that was kept on any longer. Would it have gotten back positive again? I don't know. I'm delighted that he won this. And even I'm looking at videos of him after with Sarachi in the dressing room and he's hugging him. And you're just like, this guy is one of a kind of a manager. But I think with Ireland, like it had probably run its course.
So Celtic hired a vibes man, Martin O'Neill, kind of came in and
won. Vibes man only is a little bit... That's a strong kind
harsh.
Of... Well,
no, it's not harsh.
It's a strong painting of the man. Like,
No. It's obviously more than that. And like he's from that, you know, for someone who really interestingly kind of didn't really get along with Brian Clough, and he has so many of like Brian Clough's mannerisms, and he kind of uses, you know, the kind of maybe some of the Cloughisms as well, even now. It's just a really interesting kind of dynamic between that. But he obviously had two really good coaches in Mark Fotheringham and Sean Maloney that kind of got stuff right on the pitch. Can you do the Fozzy?
No.
You'll be part of my team.
Guys, if you're not going to be training.
That's quite good. Yeah. That's actually really good.
Yeah, it was actually. But anyway, on that, so O'Neill, the vibes man, and Hearts were the data guys, and they're kind of the young, upcoming, you know, fresh new guys. And Matthew, you're a young guy. Did you want Hearts to win on Saturday, or did you want Celtic to win on Saturday?
No, I think ultimately I was happy enough to see Celtic win, but I wouldn't have really.
Why?
Celtic
won 14 out of the last 15.
Yeah, but it's Celtic, isn't it? Like,
so being an Irish person, you should just automatically support Celtic.
No, but being an Irish person, I don't automatically support Celtic. I just happen to like Celtic slightly more than I like Hearts. In the same way, I like Celtic slightly more than I like Rangers.
Slightly. Okay. Yeah. Sectarian much?
No, I just like. Really,
no, I'm joking.
A crazy
that.
Thing to say.
I'm joking.
No, I like Celtic, and I was happy to see Celtic win it. And I was,
but has been so kind to the development of Irish footballers over the year.
Yeah, but Liam Scales is playing. Liam Scales is a Gaelgor, as Ben pointed out last night. I wanted to see Liam Scales do well.
Yeah,
Oisín McIntyre, we had him on. Lovely fella. Absolutely, he wasn't on the pitch on the weekend. So
well, he was. Well, he was, as in, like he was trying to protect Lauren Shanklin from the hordes of Celtic fans that run out.
And Sarachi.
And Sarachi.
Yeah. No, look, I was happy enough to see Celtic win it. I wouldn't have been anyway devastated if Hearts won it, of course, for Scottish football. Look, it's easy to say for Scottish football it would be great for Hearts to go and win the league, yes. It's also been great for Scottish football that Hearts have even gotten to the point where they could have won the league, and that's not going to be lost. I mean, people are going to have an interest in the early part of the Scottish Premiership next year, if nothing else. They're going to have an interest to see how are Hearts getting on, who are they going to sign during the summer, are Celtic going to react, are Rangers going to react. There's still storylines to follow there. So I think ultimately Hearts not winning the league, of course, is not good for them, and it's not great for Scottish football in the same way that you know, Rangers and Celtic winning it all the time, and Celtic winning it all the time is a monopoly on something is never really bad. Positive as a product. At the same time, I don't particularly, you know, care too much about the state of Scottish football. Like, I want to see entertaining stuff, and it was entertaining regardless of the outcome at the weekend. And Celtic happened to win, and I know a lot of people who support Celtic, so I was happy to see them happy. I don't really know any Hearts fans.
No, I think it was just interesting. Like, I think Celtic, obviously this title meant so much to them, kind of because Hearts pushed them so close. And even at that, I think it would have been nice if maybe there was a bit of a recognition for that for Hearts. You know, they kind of all got on the bus and got straight down the road back to Edinburgh, and yeah, it was like one of the most, like, I guess, like, gut-wrenching things that's ever happened for that club. Like, you're kind of, it's crazy to see, like, lads who've invested, obviously players and coaching staff and managers invest so much time and you know, like, thinking that this was the year where they're going to do it the first time since 1960, and then all of a sudden it just snatched away from them. Like, you know,
would you ever watch football again if they happened to your club?
Oh, of course you would, but
obviously.
how long would it take you?
Like? It must take.
I
a
think
long
I'd
time.
Still be thinking about that. Like, yeah. I still get a flashback to Prague every kind of couple of days.
So does Jason Malumbi.
I wonder. I was actually on the plane home from Spain, and I'd fallen asleep. And when I fell asleep, I actually dreamt that we were on our way to Mexico. And then I woke up and I was on a plane, and I was like, And you know that, you know when you wake up from a dream and you've like that 2 seconds of like you think it's real before you kind of catch on to yourself.
These dreams of yours haven't been too far off the mark the last little while. Ben told me he had a dream about the Westmeath and Dublin game and said it was just level with about 2 minutes to play.
Right.
Yeah, and the scoreline was
way off.
The scoreline was like 2:11 or 2:13 each or something.
It was a drab game in your dream.
And then Dean Rock ended up coming a player coach for the last minutes of that dream. But this dream, I woke up and I was like, and it hit me. Can you imagine if like you that was a prolonged thing over the course of a season? Mm. You've led for this whole thing. You work, and also the manner of breaking the duct of the you know the monopoly that the stronghold that the two clubs have had, that Celtic have had on the SPL.
Yeah,
and then it gets like literally taken out of your hands in the last 3 minutes.
Yeah, and the dodgy VAR decision the previous week. But if you want to hear more of Ben's dreams, the Yellow iPod is with Ben tomorrow. Went to at 4 or 5 o'clock on your podcast feed. It was good, obviously, good weekend for Martin O'Neill. Good weekend for Martin O'Neill.
Really?
Knows exactly what
he's
doing.
Are we going to get down this route again? Really?
There's a News Talk Daily podcast. You want to listen to my thoughts on VAR?
Oh, no, sorry. No, VAR call, really?
You get better thoughts in your Off the Ball Daily podcast feed as well.
The handball is a...
Let's not go over this again. Anyway, I want to
ask David, why were you pressing this matter about whether I wanted Hearts or Celtic? Who did you want to win on Saturday?
Hearts.
Why was that?
Really, yeah?
Yeah, 1,000,000%. Oshie McEntee.
So is that the only reason? So if Oshie McEntee wasn't playing Hearts,
you'd rather Oshie McEntee over Liam Scales?
No, it's not.
I'm joking.
It's nothing to do with that. It was just more like, look, Celtic, great club and unbelievable the way they've come back as well. But like, it's just not great long term when they've been such a basket case of a club all season and they still win the league. I think just being better for football. Like football, you love football for different stories and different teams winning the league. Like Bayern Munich winning the league every single year in Germany is just not good. Inter winning or Juventus winning the league in Serie A all those years in a row, it's just not good for football. I just want to see someone different win it. Like that's why, like if it was Hearts, if it was Aberdeen, if it was St Mirren, if it was any of them, it would have felt the same.
The only thing is like I have absolutely like I've zero affinity to Hearts where I have a lot of affinity to Celtic, and it's not even like,
but do you though, because it's Irish club.
I would have family that are big Celtic fans, and I would have grown up getting the new Celtic kit every season. Back when the East
Sorry, Joey Barton.
They used to be able to put alcohol and gambling sponsors on it, and I used to be able to get in Carling Celtic kits every year. Even if you look at the current team, you've Gael Gore, Liam Scales in a centre half, you've Irishman Martin O'Neill as a manager. I still think that the fans embody the natural spirit of Celtic. I don't think the board and the owners do at all. I don't think that's controversial to say that in the slightest. But like when you put on a Celtic game, and especially when it's an away game, whenever you're watching the Green Brigade in the corner, especially if it's an away game and you have say 2 stands at the stadium in Fair Park, wherever it is, taken up by Celtic fans, and you see the political banners on display that would align with my political thinking. You see Palestine flags being flown about. You see other Irish flags being flown about the stands, like
the Vatican flag.
The Vatican flag is maybe not so much anymore to my taste, but like flags of certain, you know, political people who are involved in the history of this country being waved around the away end. Like I can't help but not feel an affinity and a bit of a grow towards that.
Is it cool to be a Celtic fan now? Is it like in the same way that it's cool to be a kneecap fan? It's cool to be a Vittorio Angeloni fan.
Is the question, is republicanism cool? Is that the question?
It's just an interesting time in the country, like, and it's a generational thing too. Yeah. Like, you know, like whereas
I don't see a problem with. I know some people who see a problem who are like have always been hardcore Republicans and Gael Gores, and they kind of have a little bit of a gripe with this kind of current trend of of. You know, people leaning into republicanism and being Irish a lot more. I don't see a problem with it.
And people are kind of finding their Irishness again. All of a sudden,
I don't see a problem with that at all. I think the more
it's a new identity, like
exactly,
as in,
yeah.
like and it's that, a it's yeah. a it's a country really like not fully unified. But let's just you know, we'll just park that for the time being. But like it's 110 years now since 1916. Obviously, we're still kind of finding our feet as well. Like in. I think it's an interesting thing to think about, like what, you know, obviously Celtic was set up by, and they wore the jersey on Saturday with the commemoration to the famine. Interestingly, was there any kind of mention of the, like, Ireland didn't have a, Ireland ever had the international team a jersey to do with the famine or anything like that.
But FIFA prevents you from putting any political displays in jerseys. So you might remember we had the 1916 one on a jersey in 2016, and we actually ended up getting punished by FIFA for that. You're not actually allowed as an international side.
Which
also kind of wonders me, how does the poppy go on the jersey of England and Scotland and North of Ireland?
Just a quick one there, you mentioned about the Irish language and all that sort of stuff. We've had Daryl Caneja in here a couple of times over the last little while. He's obviously a Gael goer from on Gael Talk down in Kerry, and presents on Radio Gael Talk. And he was speaking as well about the Irish language and about how it's not the Irish language that he grew up learning. It's not the Irish language that he speaks. It's not the Irish language that he was taught. Mm. It's also not, and he was mentioning about like how he doesn't speak the Irish language as well as his father would have, and that annoys him a little bit. And it annoys him the same way that his kids don't speak the Irish language the same way he did, or he does. But he recognises the fact that for something to stay alive, it has to evolve.
Yeah.
And that applies across everything in life.
Yeah.
And he was speaking about kneecap and all, and how about the way they're doing it is totally different from what he has and what way he looks at the Irish language, but he recognises that it's a positive thing overall for something that he loves.
It's lost its richness.
Exactly.
I think every language has.
And he mentioned that too. The English language, we come on here and we speak very intellectually. We stand out there and people wouldn't understand what we're saying.
Yeah.
But you know that the
but language develops and it takes.
The point is that what he's talking about still exists. And it's still there for you if you want it. And it really annoys me. I actually had this conversation at the weekend that, like, I can't speak a word of Irish, really. Yeah. I could string the odd thing together here and there and I understand what certain words mean and all that sort of thing. But, like, we were in school for however many years, 6, 7, 8 years. And
you do it from primary school as well, of course.
But I could speak more German than I can speak Irish.
That's a failure of the system.
That's wrong.
I know we're going down. Can I tie this back in sport, right? That kind of new, like, revival. Are the men's and women's national teams part of this? Because the way the last couple of months have gone, and especially it obviously helps by having a huge national moment, but like that moment in Budapest, I've never seen a country like so united behind team not in an international tournament.
Yeah,
I've never seen that sort of way. Is there just a new kind of wave of
New Ireland?
Sports, like, I don't know whether specifically the Irish and the Irish national teams are at the forefront of it, but sport is a vessel for everything, you know, like it or not. And we see it regularly in the GAA. When players go up and do a speech, they'll make a point of doing something, saying something in Irish, and I imagine it would be the same thing on the football front. But it's just the fact that these occasions where you're in front of 50, 60, 70,000 people in a stadium going up to collect a trophy happen few and far between in football in this country, because you know, they just don't. They happen at the end of a season for the FAI Cup final, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
You know, when do we get the opportunity for Nathan Collins or Liam Scales to stand up and in front of the whole stand and lift the trophy? It doesn't happen. It's just not how the football works in this country.
I'd be
wanting
to bring back the Carling Nations trophy.
Yeah, sure.
All 532 people at the North of Ireland versus Wales in the Eden Stadium.
but I think it's an interesting. I think it just we realised that in that Budapest game, and I think we always knew it, but it just became more. It just was at the forefront of our minds again, is that we are like a football country, and you know, and the one thing that the GAA doesn't have is like the international relevance, I guess. So obviously it's very important.
We're a football country, but we're lacking football infrastructure, and that is a very clear difference between them, and it's very clear to disparage between them. Football is at the heart of the nation, but we are not given the right infrastructure and support that we should be given, considering the place it has in our hearts.
Yeah, well, look, we're already tight for time. There's obviously a Patrick O'Donovan interview in the Sunday Independent that you can go and find, where he spoke about many different things, including the League of Ireland and obviously the Israel game coming up in the autumn. I suppose it was a good weekend, obviously, for Martin O'Neill. It wasn't a great weekend for Robbie Keane. They missed out in the Hungarian title first time since 2018 since Ferencváros haven't won the Hungarian title. Good news as well, Albert Riera has gone from Eintracht Frankfurt.
I saw this.
Absolutely delighted to see him gone, and good riddance.
Can I read the quote?
Where he'll pop up next?
Some random European epos.
Can I read the quote?
Yeah, go for it.
I go in peace, but sad knowing that you just used 20% of the power of Albert.
Yeah.
Nothing like the even speaking
very humble
the third
guy.
Person, isn't it?
The third person, there you go.
Very humble guy.
I suppose,
if you want to read the full thing, it's on his Instagram. There's also a bit where he says, you know, I came this club in eighth, I leave this club in eighth. that is not good enough.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, brilliant.
Good man, Albert.
Michael Owen of speaking.
Yeah. I suppose Seamus, we didn't get to really, we'll come back to it again, but Seamus Coleman, obviously
we need to talk about this.
Announcing his,
talk about Seamus.
He's leaving Everton.
Yeah.
Very quickly, do we think, what's the future in the Ireland shirt?
He continues to play on and he goes to a club. I don't know if he goes to the Premier League or a Championship, but he continues to play on.
He shouldn't go anywhere near the Championship.
That's my gut feeling.
If he's not able to be kicking ball at all in the Premier League, as far as his fitness, he can't go into Championship.
Or League of
Ireland? You can spare your minutes. Your minutes in the Championship can be managed.
I suppose you can. Yeah,
you can play a game a week at a level that he's.
I think he should go to America. Well, he should go to America for a while, and we still pick him. When I say we need to speak about this, what I'm talking about is that absolute disgrace of a farewell he was given.
Yeah,
yeah. That's why I thought you were going with the steps.
Yeah. No. True. Yeah. Yeah.
That is a disgrace, and I understand. Yeah. Right. It's fine. Everton fans, if they were, I don't know the ins and outs of it, obviously, whether they were told it was going to happen, whether they forgot that it was going to happen, why it didn't happen before the game,
yeah,
you tell me. And I can understand the annoyance if they weren't told about it, but regardless, on all fronts, it's an absolute joke to have a player who's committed that much to a club for that many years when he's had options to go and do other things at other points in his career, and you can't even give him a proper send off at Goodison. And Grant, I'm sure they'll go and organise something early next season and they'll bring him out and they'll do clap, whatever. It won't touch the moment there where he's actually come on the pitch and whatever about what happened in the game. I understand emotions are high, it's football, but taking everything away from it, it's ridiculous what went on there at the weekend.
Imagine paying £60,000 someone, they stay 17 years at the club, and you repay them with having about, 5,000 fans left in the stadium after his last game.
The whole 60,000 thing kind of annoyed me as well, because, you know, those days are hopefully long gone.
Mm.
His influence, but he's going to be in the Ireland squad now next week.
I did have a feeling after the Macedonia game when he went off, the North Macedonia game when he went off and his kids and all that sort of thing. I still didn't think that was going to be his last game for Ireland. I thought there could be a world where they actually, and I'm probably too late for them to do it now, but I thought it might have been the Qatar game where they decided, this is going to be Seamus' last game and we're going to sell it on that. Do you know what I mean? Mm. If you had any doubts about coming, you have to come now. I thought that might be what they do, but they might not even do that still. But I don't think we've seen the last of him in Ireland, sure, one way or another. Yeah. Euro 2028?
Let's see.
Doubt it.
Just before we move on, the Green Scene on Off the Ball is with Cadbury's, a proud sponsor of the Republic of Ireland football teams. Yeah, it wasn't a great weekend for Jake O'Brien either or Caoimhín Kelleher. But moving swiftly along, they've had unbelievable seasons and they still obviously have chances to play European football next year as well. Very quickly, kind of other bits and pieces. Pico Lopez got a lovely send off in Crumlin. He's off to the World Cup.
Very cool.
With Cape Verde. It's going to be really cool. I suppose this week, if we had our way and we had our dreams realised in Prague and then back in Dublin, we'd be kind of thinking.
We would have probably
done a whole podcast on Troy Parrott's rib injury. We would have had some doctor on and been like, is he going to be fit? Like, what does this mean? Is he able to breathe okay? Can he sleep okay? Like, that's what we probably would have done.
And you know what? I would have loved every minute of it.
Every second of it.
You know what I was thinking? I watched the New Zealand, I got home last night and I watched the New Zealand squad announcement, and they had this brilliant announcement. They used all facets of the culture and the language and everything all around the country. I watched the little bit of Scottish ones one. What would we have done for our squad announcement? Like, how would we have done that? Because I presume it would have been a lot better than Hamer just going up and going, this is the squad.
Scotland had Ewan McGregor. We would have had probably Barry Keoghan. Paul Mescal.
We could have done that.
Barry Keoghan's a good shout. I could see Barry Keoghan having done that.
I think they would have done something. I think they would have probably got them all.
They
would have done a few different things.
One
person would be doing the defenders, the next person would do the midfielders.
Yeah. So who's doing the goalkeepers?
Imagine how good this would have been.
Nicky Byrne's
a good chef for that. Yeah.
Defenders, I'm going to say maybe we get Liam Neeson for the defender. Someone who's
your rocks.
Seamus would do it.
Seamus the wrestler.
Yeah, Seamus the wrestler. He's a big lad.
Yeah, Off the Ball podcast and your OTB daily feed if you want to listen to Seamus.
ABC.
Midfielders, I'm going to go. I'd say Barry Keoghan for the midfielder.
No, Barry Keoghan's forward. 100%. Barry Keoghan's he's your strikers. Midfielders, Troy Parrott.
Midfielders, something a bit of class. Maybe kind of Saoirse Ronan. Maybe she's doing the midfield.
Or Killian Murphy.
No, I could see it being
Killian Murphy.
It'd be like a poet. They'd get a poet in for 100%.
We'd dig up Patrick Havlin.
A singer. Who's a big singer? Big Irish singer. At the minute
Brian Warfield.
Hoats in their own right.
No, he is, but like, other than that,
I could see it being a poet, like your Eye of the Needle pass, like lyrical midfielders.
Singer songwriters are poets in their own right, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, true. Yeah, look what could have been. I suppose, Neither lastly, more. we can kind of finish on this, and then, unless it's somewhere else you want to go.
No.
Yeah, obviously we have the playoff finals coming up over the next kind of week or two,
and
with Irish involvement. But all the squads have kind of been announced now, and over the next kind of couple of days, England, I think, named their squad on Friday. Lunchtime Live is a radio show on News Talk from like 12 to 2, and they just had a thing where would you be supporting England in the World Cup? And I can safely say I won't be. Yeah. You lads?
No. One thing.
It's mad how like
people. Why is that a conversation?
Because
I'm not calling out the production team, but I am calling out the production team. And if one of them want to join us right now, tell us, because why are we talking about that?
Because we watch so much Premier League that, like, you know, that I'd say, like, even like, you know, people younger than us, like kids younger than us, like teenagers, love, like, you know, they love the Premier League and they love like Declan Rice, or they love, I know, if they're Everton fan, they love Jordan Pickford. You know, if they're should they not support see them do well in the World Cup? Is that not like a good
like
thing?
I watch basketball, so I watch the NBA, so I should support the American basketball team when they play. Is that the
I like chocolate, but I don't like it when someone puts it in my roast dinner. Do you know what I mean?
I don't really.
That is out now.
I don't really. Yeah.
Well, I can like Declan Rice. I can like Jordan Pickford, but I don't have to like him when he's doing something else.
Yeah. No, I get it.
I think when you search too hard for an analogy, and don't really know where you plucked that from.
No, real people get it.
Our producer Brona is just like looking at the sky, going, "What is going on here?" Anyway,
I will say though, it doesn't annoy me. I get it. But you know when we like go to like when we're going to Ireland games and all that, and like some of our chants are centered around like England. I'm kind of thinking, come on, like, you know, who cares about them? Why are we thinking about them? We don't be thinking about them. We don't be worrying about ourselves. That is one thing. I'll probably. Don't clip that because I'll get rinsed for that. But I'd rather our chance be positive towards us as opposed to thinking about them.
Okay, yeah. The World Cup is not far away. It's like 35 days away or something.
I'm not in the mood at all.
I know that. I kind of am this week, to be honest. I just saw the 4-4-2 kind of preview of it as well. So I'm kind of looking forward to getting kind of my hands on that and digging into it. But who do we want to see win the World Cup?
Brazil. I watched Brazil's squad announcement yesterday. I logged on from 7:45 knowing that it would start at 8. When did Carlo Ancelotti eventually step up to the stage? 55 minutes in.
Yeah.
They had a whole thing. There was 3.4 million people in the YouTube stream with me.
Yeah.
That's only YouTube. That's not getting the Brazilian people watching TV.
Similar numbers in the green scene right now.
the squad announcement was insane.
Imagine 3.4 million
the
people.
The cheers
watching.
When... Like, not only Neymar, but like the cheers when all the Flamengo defenders got announced, when Endrick got announced, when Rayan got announced. Mm. It was, and then like the hilarious kind of comparison to when people who we watch every week, like Martinelli gets announced, and there was just
Rayan.
I really want Brazil to win.
Matthew?
I usually like to see how it unfolds for a while and then.
Then you, you see who's good, basically.
No. I just, you know, you get a grow for a team. You watch a game, and you're like, yeah, I like them. One thing I don't like is when the underdog gets too far, unless they go and win it. So I don't want to see any of these teams who put together a magical run and get to the semi-finals. I know that's what the World Cup is all about, and it's about bringing the countries together and everyone having a great time. That's grand, but don't take away from the semi-finals and the final. That's all I'm asking. Unless you're going to go and win it, then I'm all right with it. I always have a liking towards the Netherlands.
Yes,
but I. Don't think they've.
I knew you were going to say that. Yeah. I just knew you loved the colour orange.
Let's say about that. Better. Dark horses, very quickly.
You've put me really on the spot here now. Really, really on the spot. Ecuador.
Ecuador, a good under 20s team a couple of years ago. That's a very Tim Pickery answer of you, Ben. I like that. Matthew?
I always like them, like the South American teams, for just to cause a bit of trouble in there. Mm. Like Uruguay.
Yeah,
I say that for every World Cup. Uruguay are going to go far here, and they don't really.
Marcelo Bielsa,
odd time,
but all of that, to be honest.
Sitting on his box.
Yeah, I'm actually just reading John Wilson's World Cup book.
Yeah,
at the minute, and 1982 was the last chapter I've read, and it's
who are the like
sensational,
widely accepted underdogs at the minute? Is it Norway?
Norway and Japan. But Japan are obviously missing Karamatoma, and they have a couple of defensive issues as well. So I think Norway, Japan, I think Ecuador are up there as well.
Are they? Yeah.
Yeah.
I just think Ekra are a very good young squad. They've been together now for a couple of years.
They haven't
and then you have your spine, like,
yeah.
You've Pacho, you've Caicedo, you've
Is Ener Valencia still
Ener Valencia? Oh,
I don't know, actually.
There's your top scorer outside Sheffield for the World Cup there, Ener Valencia.
Right, okay. Yeah. I think there's no better way to leave an Irish football podcast on Ener Valencia being an outside shout for a World Cup top goal scorer. That's all we have time for on today's episode of The Green Scene. Remember, if you want to get in contact with us, thegreenscene@offtheball.com is our email. And we have a few emails there.
Maybe just didn't get around to them.
We just didn't get around to them. If you want to message us off the ball football on Instagram or off the ball main page either.
Or come find us personally.
Yeah, come find us personally. Actually, if you see us in the street, right, like you're not going to see us in the street, but if you do, make sure you go up to Ben and Matthew in particular. They love the attention.
Yeah.
Absolutely love it. Anytime they're like, I was chatting to Matthew since he's come back from Spain, he's like, oh, this fella, like, this fella approached me in Murcia and this fella approached me in Valencia. So make sure you get on.
You insinuating that I just have a much deeper Monaghan accent than you.
No. Just get on to the two egomaniacs here. Mm. Right. That's all we have time for on today's Green Scene. I'm being, delighted to be joined by Matthew Brennan and Ben Symes. Thanks very much, lads. We'll be back again next week.
The Green Scene on Off the Ball with Cadbury, a proud sponsor of the Republic of Ireland football teams.